Welcome to So Many Bits. I'm your host, Bill Nielsen, and joining me from this palatial VoIP line in the middle of the internet is Brandon Shockney. Brandon, how are you?
Hey, Bill. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Hey, I'm doing well. You know, it's been a minute, so apologies if you were like, Bill, are you stupid? You didn't put out an episode. I am stupid, yes.
No, I would never say that. I would never say that about you. Is this the final episode of the year, is it?
It might be the final episode of something. We'll figure it out.
Ooh.
And as usual, I'd like to have you on, Brandon, so we can talk about games of the year for the preceding year. So that'll be just as a reminder for anyone listening for the first time. Brandon and I think we're pretty active with playing games, but that doesn't mean we have the capacity to cover like every game that's come out in the current year. So usually. Right. We're just talking about games we've played this year, not games that came out this year.
Although I will say this year, probably more than other years, I think I probably got through more games on average than I usually would. Just because it's been such a crazy year and we haven't been able to like do all the things we would otherwise do. So it's been a big video game playing year for me. So I think a lot of what I'm going to talk about are the games that have come out this year.
Awesome. That's good to hear. Yeah, that'll give some good perspective while I, you know, might meander a little bit more.
Go crazy.
That's okay.
Go crazy.
I mean, I am stupid, as we noted earlier. So, of course, before we do that, though, there's something very important we have to do. And that's, you know, as always, we have to do some screen watching.
Screen watching, oh boy, and you really cooked up a special one for us this episode.
That's right, yeah. You know, there's a film classic out there, then adapted into a television series that I thought we should talk about today. And of course, I'm referring to Spaceballs, the animated series.
Whew, boy. First of all, when you presented this to me as something to watch, I had no idea it existed. I was like, oh, okay. And then I watched like a trailer for the show and kind of got a sense of what I was in for. And then watching that episode, I will admit, Bill, I tried to find a way to not pay for this at first. I tried to search for a YouTube video, something that had the full episode. I came up empty and had to resort to purchasing the episode on iTunes for, I think, $3. But you know what? I have it now. I own it. I own a little bit of Spaceballs, the animated series.
It's going to be like after that one Super Bowl where everyone got the free U2 album, and then the Google searches for how do I remove stuff from iTunes shot up like 8,000%.
Right.
It's just going to be you searching that over and over again.
I still have that album on my phone. I've tried to get rid of it, and it keeps popping back up.
I feel like it's doable. You can do it on Steam. You got to be able to do it on iTunes somehow.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this is Season 1, Episode 3, Grand Theft Starship. Original air date, September 21st, 2008. And simultaneously, that feels like it was too long ago and not far long enough ago for an animated series about Spaceballs to air. Like, the movie came out in the late 80s, I think, and you'd think that's when they would do a cartoon if they were ever going to do it. And then they waited, you know, 20 years to actually put one together, and it came out on G4.
Oh, this was a G4 show? Wow. Man, well, I mean, my first issue with the first problem I had was that it's the animation style is not great. It's like a Flash cartoon, right? It's very basic.
It's thrifty.
Yeah, it feels cheap and a little bit like trashy going into it. Not that like Spaceballs itself is this like, you know, it's this amazing, you know, film that we're putting on a pedestal here. I mean, it is parody. I love Mel Brooks, but you know, it's not like it's high art. But somehow still, Spaceballs, the animated series, feels like it's dragging Spaceballs, the movie, down into the depths, with this. It feels like a fan creation more than an official show. It blows my mind that they were able to get Mel Brooks to reprise his roles in this show, as well as, I'm pretty sure, who's the voice of, Joan River. I'm pretty sure Joan Rivers is the voice of that, is of Dot for like 2 seconds.
That is Joan Rivers, yeah.
That's insane. That makes me sad that they got Joan Rivers and Mel Brooks back to like do these little few lines, right? I mean, I will say the only time that I sort of enjoyed the show was when Mel Brooks was talking. But overall, it feels like kind of this knockoff as opposed to like a sequel series.
It really does. And it looks like they actually got the actress who played Vespa in the original film, Daphne Zuniga. She is reprising her role too, and that's it.
Oh my God, really? I didn't even realize that. I mean, that's insane, right? Let's start with the title of this show. It's called Grand Theft Starship, right? And I guess it's trying to do like a Grand Theft Auto parody. It doesn't really go all in on that either. So I just think it's the laziest title we could do. It's like Grand Theft, but instead of auto, they're in space. So it's Grand Theft Starship. Get it? You get it. Video games. So I don't know. Should we just kind of go through the plot of this, or do you want to do like a quick summary of what happens?
I just wanted to mention real quick that like I think the reason that we get Grand Theft Starship and like King, you know, King of the Hill, they did Grand Theft Arlen, a somewhat similar plot actually, is like in not only is Grand Theft Auto such a popular game, but it's like such an absurd premise for a game. It's like, you know, it's a murder simulator. So like when you map that onto some other form of media, like it becomes like ridiculous in its own way. I was thinking about that in comparison to like Minecraft, where Minecraft is exceedingly popular and people everywhere are familiar with the name Minecraft, but it's a lot harder to like grab onto what it's absurd about it because it's kind of just like digital Lego bricks. Sorry if I'm selling Minecraft short to anyone, but like that's kind of what it is to me. So like it's harder to make humor out of that, or like there's less like fertile jokes there. So, you know, it makes sense to me why they would go here, but they are, yeah, agreed, absolutely as lazy as possible about where they go with those jokes.
Why do you think we haven't gotten a lot of modern-day parody for something like Fortnite? Doesn't it feel like that would be the easiest thing to kind of make fun of as opposed to something like Minecraft where it's a little bit more obscure in terms of, like, how to parody it or how to comment on it? Fortnite feels like the next logical step, right? I mean, it's a little more kid-friendly than Grand Theft Auto, but it's still, at its core, feels like it's ripe for that same type of commentary that this show is trying to do with Grand Theft Auto.
I think we're getting there. You know, I think, I don't know the exact timeline, but I'm thinking Fortnite took off within, like, the last 2 years, we'll say. So, for, like, production of television shows and, like, you know, spinning up an entire episode of a sitcom or an animated cartoon, like we could be approaching the time where we start seeing those in like 2021. And like, you know, the advantage of Fortnite is somewhat similar to Grand Theft Auto. You can do anything in Fortnite. Like, you know, you have a live concert by a pop star? Sure. Is Master Chief there? Sure. Is Thanos there? Sure. So yeah, like, right. You can, it's, you know, a playground for you to do whatever you feel like, but then also maybe you make jokes about like V-Bucks and always thank the bus driver.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to be curious to see how that kind of permeates into pop culture here in the next year or so. I'm hoping not too much, just because I'm not... I know there's a lot of people out there that like Fortnite. It's not the series for me, and I don't really like what it's doing to the video game industry as a whole, its popularity and what developers are kind of taking away from that. But you know, that's where we are.
So yeah, the summary of the episode would be Lone Star is playing this game. I don't even know if it's actually called Grand Theft Starship. That's just the title of the episode. I don't think they named the game's title, but he's playing a video game he likes a lot, and it's getting in the way of his relationship with Princess Vespa. That's the plot.
She's like got a scheduled date with him to like come rescue her. Like it's like you have to. I'm like gonna be captured at this like point in time, and you have to be there to rescue me. Or else, you know, our relationship is dead. And of course he doesn't show up because he stays in his hotel room. He's in like a hotel room. Can we talk about how the number on the room is 420?
Whoa.
Did you pick up on that? Eh?
Yeah, that's good, man. That's real good.
Yeah. Ooh. And she was like, I had to save myself. Ugh. And I wanted to be like, ooh boy, the female character on this show not being painted in a great light. She's like jealous of a video game, right? I think the line that keeps coming up, which the episode never really commits to this, but it's like the only way to really win is to stop playing. That is said a couple different times, right? So it's like video games are for losers. The only way to like live your life is to stop playing and like do other things, like to have sex with your girlfriend or whatever, right? She's like distracting him from video games with sex. I thought that was really weird.
Yeah. Okay. So I wasn't the only one who thought that's like immediately what happened. I guess, yeah, like the knocking the guy down is like the universal sign for we're about to have sex now.
Yeah. I think so, right? Or whatever is being implied there. I think that's... that's so sad. I feel like the show is trying to like throw in as many Easter eggs as it can, like lazily, but like, you know, all the characters in the background are all characters from different video games. And it sounds like, you know, whoever's writing this episode does know about video games, but then they also seem to have so much contempt for video games as well. So it's like, wait, so do you like video games or not? Because the episode doesn't know whether we should like video games or not.
Maybe a real self-loathing fan of video games.
Right. So it's like part Tron parody, right? Where Lone Star and Vespa get sucked into the video game, of course. They have to go into the video game.
And the setup for that is naturally that a Vespa doesn't know how to play video games and she... seemingly plays them so badly she ends up transporting them inside.
Right. Yeah. Like what? Literally whatever. Right. It's just like, sure. I don't know. And so they're like in this video game that is just video game, the video game, because it's literally everything and everyone's in there. And then Barf has to like seek out Yogurt to, help as to get his friends like out of the video game. None of it really makes any sense. The animation is all gross. I hate how everyone looks. I think it's, you know, we're doing like really tired gags. There's like a gag about like evil laughs that I feel like I've seen like a billion times where a person's laughing like, and I was like, oh, come on.
They did fit a Matrix parody in there like 8 years after the Matrix came out.
Oh, man. I mean, well, this thing's really on the pulse, right? I mean, it's the reason it feels like a knockoff is because it's all this parody missing all of the charm and wit of Mel Brooks, right? He brought something to his films that felt snappy, felt interesting or unique. Whereas this show is just so lazy and tired and going for the lowest hanging fruit. That's really what made me like really turn on it immediately. I was like, man, this is just really, and the fact that Mel Brooks is like reprising his roles here. I'm like, this stinks, man. That like, it makes me, feel sorry for who's involved. And I really just found it immediately dated, right? There's that Princess Peach comes into, view, and she has like gigantic breasts, and it's like, oh dear God, like what are we doing? I couldn't get over how bad it was.
You know, I do like lean on like remembering stuff I did in improv a little, but my feeling here is like, if I recognize something in your scripted animated sitcom as a bad improv scene, then maybe that scene deserved a rewrite. Like, for example, when President Scroob, Mel Brooks, and then Dark Helmet, who now looks like Stewie, by the way.
Right.
They have a scene where they talk about going from phase one to phase two. And they're like, you know, they're arguing about it and they're not doing anything. It's like, ah, phase one is good. We should never go to phase two. Well, I've got phase three and phase four. Those are good. I don't know. What about Lone Star? And like, just like the back and forth, and nothing's happening. And they're just talking about it, like the thing that they want to do, which is like always a sign of death, I think, for an improv scene, is like talking about the thing that you want to do rather than just like doing the thing.
Right. Like, oh, absolutely.
And then like later they have the scene where they're talking about like, where should all the video game characters go? And they like, you know, talk about different places they can go. Like they talk about Raccoon City, like, no, let's not go to Raccoon City. And then they're like, oh my God, you probably remember this too. They say, let's go to the Educational Games Island. No one ever plays those games. And then the character winks.
Oh God. The only line that I found sort of amusing, is, I mean, I didn't laugh, but I was like, huh. Was when Yogurt makes a joke about his like typing game. I thought that was kind of amusing. That was the only part I was like, yeah, I kind of like that. But then everything else, no, it doesn't work for me. Did you notice, I want to talk about this because I don't think I'm making this up, but the joke is so unclear and it's so bad that I had to just break it down with you. When Lone Star fights the boss, he defeats the boss, and his like little ring laser sword gets it gets a little bit bigger. And then it cuts to Vespa and she's like looking at him and she kind of like blushes. Do you remember this part?
Well, yeah, I mean, that, so that's not a good joke. I actually don't remember that, but like that's, you know, related to, you know, the Schwartz and Spaceballs where it's like,
right, you know, your dick, right? So I but the moment is so weirdly subtle leading up to Vespa's action of like, it just gets like a little bit bigger and then it cuts to Vespa and she's like, boo. And I was like, was that supposed to, everything else is so like blatant. Why didn't they just go all in on that joke? Not that it would have been good, but like,
why did they show any semblance of restraint there?
Yeah, why was that almost more like confusing than anything else? I don't know why. It's like, oh God, this is the worst thing we've watched for screen watching, I think, that I've been a part of. You've probably watched worse things, but out of all the episodes,
Bible Man fights the Game Master Bully. Oh. You should watch that if you want to know true horror.
I don't know if I want to. I don't know.
Yeah, you probably don't want to, but you should anyway.
Well, good to know.
I guess there's one other thing I wanted to mention here is, so like the bad guy is President Scroob, the Mel Brooks guy in the suit, and he gets into the video game, but then he like shows the video game people how to protect themselves from game players, and like he makes them more durable, he gives them extra lives. Also weirdly, like all the game characters have like NES controllers strapped to them for something we've never seen before.
Yeah, very strange.
Is he the good guy?
Who?
Scroob. Like, what has happened? Think about what's happened in the story up until then. Lone Star murders all the game characters. They're like, we don't like being murdered. Scroob shows up. Here is how you don't die from the game characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Doesn't that, like, make him good? That he would show up and do that and help them?
Right, but this episode, or the point of view of this episode is that video games are, in my mind, this is what it's saying. Video games are dumb, and these characters, like, deserve to die, right? Because they're just video games. And it's all, like, pointless violence and blah, blah, blah.
That's true. I mean, you are right about that, but also, like, it feels like their point of view of the characters was a little confused.
Oh, yeah. For sure. I mean, this feels like this script was churned out in like a couple hours and there was no real sense of let's take another look at some of these things. It was all just kind of like churn it out and go. So yeah, whew, I can't wait to give my ratings on this one.
Then let's go to it. So just for any new listeners, we rate all of our episodes we watch and screen watching in three different categories. Those are accuracy, condescension, and entertainment. And like with any video game, we do it on a scale of 6 to 10. So first, Brandon, with accuracy, going 6 being completely inaccurate to 10 being lifelike accuracy, how would you rate the video game accuracy of this episode of Spaceballs, the animated series?
Man, I mean, I can't give it the lowest score in this respect because it is like throwing in characters and it is like making specific things, even if they are like references and whatnot, even if they are a little bit obvious and a little bit lazy. So I'll give this a 7.
Ooh, yeah, I'm torn because, yeah, they do appear to be referencing characters. They do appear to be parodying characters, like, with intent.
I don't think it's well done, but they are doing it.
Yeah, that's okay. So to your point, I'll give it a 6.5. Like, they are resembling things that are true about video games, or like there's a conscious effort to like mirror or invert known gaming knowledge or tropes. So okay, I'll give them a little credit for their accuracy.
Okay.
Next up is condescension. If this were to be completely non-condescending, give it a 6. And if you found it to be extremely condescending, give it a 10.
I'm going to go full 10 on this one. This one feels like it's talking down to me and it's better than video games and blah, 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 blah. I found this extremely condescending.
Yeah, I got to go with a 10 as well. Like, they really seem to hate video games. Have characters, you know, Vespa is always saying she hates video games and they're stupid and all the characters seem to think it's a waste of time. Let's go with a 10 there. And then lastly, entertainment. If you found this to be completely unentertaining, give it a 6. And if you found it to be hilariously entertaining, give it a 10.
I think I'll go a 5.9 that you can round up to a 6 if you so wish. I did not like this.
The scale ends at 6, Brandon.
Fine. 6, but the lowest 6. 6.0.
Okay, so 6.0. You can't get any lower than 6.0. It's mathematically impossible.
That's true.
I normally when we do these, like almost as a bit, I'll like mention one joke I liked and then I'll bump it up a point, but I can't think of a joke I liked in this entire episode.
Right.
So I gotta give it a 6.
Yeah! 6, baby, 6.
I think even in Bible Man, I found a few things that I thought were kind of silly and fun in that way, but not here. I can see why this, you know, only lasted a season on G4. Hey, but hey, G4 is coming back. Maybe it's time for a revival.
No, Let's stop you. I'm stopping you.
Mel Brooks is still alive. Joan Rivers has passed. No, Mel Brooks is still alive.
Nope. I'm not going to let you like speak that into existence. Okay.
Well, if you leave me no other option, I have no other choice but to take a break. And yeah. then when we come back, we can talk about our favorite games of 2020. Back from break, Brandon, now is the time for us to deliberate. We're not going to really deliberate exactly. We're just going to kind of say the things we're thinking. And we're going to talk about our games of the year for 2020.
Awesome.
Yeah. So we've got slightly different formats to our lists here. Brandon has a straight list of 10 games. And I have a list of 5 games where I'm going to recognize them in a certain category. And then I have my top 5 games ranked 5-1. But we'll alternate going back and forth, talking about them, our games. And at the end, you'll know our favorite games from the past 360 days. It's 60. Still 2020 right now.
It's true.
So, we could record this and then play our favorite game of the year afterward. Apologies in advance if that happens.
It's true. It could happen.
Lead us off here. Brandon, what was your number 10 favorite game of the year?
My number 10. So we're starting at the bottom.
Yeah, start at the bottom and work up.
Okay. So at the very bottom here for me is a game that I plugged a lot of hours into based on my Nintendo end of year notice, right? It sent me all my stats and whatnot. It's a game that I found very charming, but lacking in a lot of key areas. And that is Paper Mario, The Origami King is my number 10 game of the year. Things I liked about this game, the animation, it looks great. The writing, the humor, all throughout is really, really well done. I like the world that has been set up here, I like just exploring the different areas, right? Just kind of wandering around, where I find the game really falters, and why it's lower on my list is the combat, the mechanics of the circle grid system does not really work for me. It's horribly repetitive. The only times it's interesting is when it's boss fights. But the progression system, what you get from fighting these different enemies, there's not a lot of incentive to fight them, right? You just get coins, but you are never low on in the first place. So there's a lot of things that I loved about this game. It's not one that I think I'll ever revisit. It's a one and done for me. I thought it did enough to at least make the list and warrant being discussed.
Excellent. Yeah. It sounded Origami King was a bit of a mixed bag from what I heard from people who have played it. I got an hour in and I found it tedious and I stopped.
Yeah. Not unfair. I think it's. I think you've very quickly learn if that combat system is going to be your cup of tea or not. For me, I really had to push through that aspect of the game to get to a lot of the more fun parts.
Alrighty, cool. Then the first game I'm going to mention here is the game I just started but want to play more. And that honor goes to Grindstone. Grindstone Ooh. Just came out on the Nintendo Switch. It is, that old trope of a match 3 puzzler. There's 3 different kinds of gems and you kind of want to match them up. But it does something a little cool with it where it turns it into a progression where you are a warrior who is slaying monsters of the right color as you move through the puzzle. So there will be red, blue, and yellow monsters and you want to set up a chain where you, get 10 yellow monsters in a row and that drops a jewel that you can pick up or a key to unlock a treasure chest to get a weapon that makes the puzzles easier. I've had a good time with it so far. I think it would be actually more enjoyable to play on a phone or like to use a touchscreen interface. But, you know, it works with a controller, works with analog. And I literally started playing it yesterday, the day before this recording. And I'm hoping to get more into it in the remainder of 2020 or even into 2021.
That's awesome. I love the way it looks. The art style is like the biggest selling point for me. It makes me want to pick it up as well, just on that alone.
Cappy does good work. Yeah, that's like their artwork is the reason I want to pick up that Steven Universe / OKKO 2-pack. Because, like, I don't know a ton about the OKKO show, but, like, the art and the animation looks really sharp.
It's a fun show. It is really a good time.
Brandon, number 9.
My number 9 video game is Astro's Playroom for the PlayStation 5. The built-in game that came with the PlayStation 5. Astro's Playroom is mainly, it's more of a showcase of what the DualSense controller can do and the capabilities of this generation's console as opposed to last generation's console. And it's also like a love letter to all things PlayStation. You know, the things you collect are different controllers and devices and consoles from Sony's history. So I really enjoyed that aspect of it. It's also like a fun platformer in its own right. I just, you know, normally with games like this, I would kind of play them for a little bit just to kind of get a sense of the controls, and I would put it down. But I kept coming back to Astro's Playroom. I just like 100%ed it. I just got the platinum trophy for it. It's not particularly hard to do that, but you know, it's got a lot going on. There's like time trials. There's, you know, 4 different areas with a bunch of collectibles for you to revisit and find stuff for. So I just really loved it. I thought the DualSense is an amazing controller, and the capabilities with that are really exciting. And this game does a really good job at showing that, showcasing that in a way that is accessible and bright and colorful and entertaining in its own right.
Astro's Playroom is the thing that gives me the most FOMO about not having a PS5 right now. Like, there are some cool looking games coming out for it next year, but for this moment, that is the thing that I'm like, oh, I wish I was playing that right now.
Yeah. No, I think you would absolutely enjoy it. And yeah, the DualSense is a revolution. That controller is gonna change the game, I think. Hopefully. But we'll see what happens in the coming years.
My next game is the last game I finished. So the last game I have completed this year, and that is What Remains of Edith Finch. That originally came out in 2018, and you know, for good or for bad, you could just call it a walking simulator. You are a young girl named Edie, and you are going back to your family home, which is a bit supernatural in nature, and everyone in your family has had a unique events befall them over the years, and you're kind of discovering them and reliving them as you go. And it's a very bittersweet experience. Maybe not the best game to play on a holiday when you are where it's like a game that celebrates you know, loss and remembrance, and you're alone for that holiday. But nevertheless, it is a game I chose to play, and I definitely, the time I had with it was memorable, if not like purely enjoyable. I would really recommend What Remains of Edith Finch, though maybe not the Switch version, because, you know, it's not a deal breaker, but the performance on the Switch version is not perfect. It stutters in certain places, so maybe get it on like PS4 or, you know, PC or whatever.
Okay, yeah, good. No, that's one that I've kind of seen around, and I've thought about pulling the trigger on a couple times, but just haven't gotten around to it. But I do like games like that, right, that are like a little less focused on gameplay and more focused on story.
Well, awesome. Then, Brandon, what remains of your top 10 list?
Next up, my number eight is a sequel to one of my favorite PlayStation 4 games of all time, and we have Resident Evil 3. Bill, you know how much I loved Resident Evil 2. I really got going on that earlier in the year. I feel like I was playing catch up, being like, oh, this game's amazing. And you were like, I know, I've played it like a year ago. And I was like, buddy, you don't understand. But anyway, I was very, very excited to immediately jump into Resident Evil 3 after I finished 2. And while 3 is a more straightforward, shorter experience, I really still enjoyed my time with it. First of all, it looks great. The game is both Resident Evil 2 and Resident Evil 3 are beautiful games on the PlayStation 4. I just enjoyed following through that story. I really enjoyed the gameplay mechanics. I love exploration. They have done so much to make backtracking not annoying and feel more purposeful. I really enjoyed my time with that. I'm being greedy, and I want more remakes in this style. Just give them all to me, and I will play them up. But I was a big fan of Resident Evil 3.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, Resident Evil 3 definitely. It's got its good points. It's a game I played through this year and enjoyed myself. It didn't end up making my list, but like certainly didn't regret the time with it. And right now, it's got to be down to like, you know, $19.99 at most retailers. And for that price, I would heartily recommend people go out and get it. It's a nice like 6-7 hour single player experience.
Right. Exactly. And I got to give it up for the shorter games sometimes. Sometimes that's what I want. Sometimes I'm in the mood for a game that is under 10 hours to complete. You know, I'm actively looking for that. And that'll come back in a game later on in my list here. But I think that there's something to be said about shorter games as opposed to the, you know, 50 to 100 hour experience.
Very valid. Yes. Yeah. My next category here is the game I spent the most money on in 2020. And those of you who know me well may be surprised to find out it was Rock Band 4.
Wow. Yeah, I was not expecting that to be the answer, but I love it.
I just, I'm a big sucker for the plastic instruments, and I'm kind of dumb. No, sorry, I'm kind of stupid. We've covered this earlier. So for the longest time, I just couldn't figure out how to, like, play them in my apartment without, you know, aggravating people around me. I don't want to be that neighbor. Then I finally figured out, there's a headphone jack on the DualShock, so I could just run audio to the DualShock and then play the game using headphones. And, you know, the guitar still makes some noise, but not like an unbearable amount.
Right.
And I went in real hard. I bought a ton of DLC. There's been like a decade of downloaded songs. Sometimes they sold the song and then they lost the rights to sell it, and then they brought it back, and there's some tricks you can do to like find still like old copies of games that have download codes and use those to get more tracks that way. Mm-hmm. Overall it's just still a very solid experience of playing a little bit of a electronic guitar karaoke.
Hey, yeah, I feel like that's good when, yeah, you need to, like, just kind of, you know, reset a little bit, right, in terms of a game that's not asking too much of you in terms of, like, emotions, right, and it's more just, just play these songs and, you know, follow the patterns and whatnot. I think I love games like that. There are times where I need that in my life as well, and I feel like that's a good game for 2020, right?
And with that in mind, what was a good game for you for your number seven slot?
For my number seven slot, it's a game that I have not completed yet, but I am actively playing currently and have been enjoying. and that is Demon's Souls for the PlayStation 5, the remake. I am normally with games like this that are kind of brutal and punishingly difficult, I tend to give up just because I'm not having a good time. But there is something about Demon's Souls that is really clicking for me. I find this world to be fascinating. It looks incredible on PlayStation 5. Blue Point did a great job on really improving a lot of these elements and updating things from the original. So I, despite me dying and losing, you know, all my progress or whatever several times, I'm ready to dive back in because I just want to see what else this world has to offer. And it's just, it's been a good experience. It's a game I'm in like no rush to complete. But does reward you when you do, you know, make it past the next thing, or you are learning what's around the next corner, so you're better prepared. You know, it's been a good experience, and it makes me want to give some of their other games in this franchise a second chance. Like I want to seek out Bloodborne again. I want to seek out Sekiro. I want to like do some other things that give me the same sense of gameplay. But Demon's Souls is a great entry point, I think, and a great launch title for the PlayStation 5.
It's really a culmination of over like a decade of progress for that franchise, where it went from like a thing where I can still remember people talking about it like, hey, there's this weird game where like, you know, you die or you're dead, and like you try and swing your sword and it whacks the wall and there are like crystal slugs, and now it's the flagship launch title on the new PlayStation. Like, that's how far it's come. And
right
now everyone knows it's Demon's Souls, not Demon Souls 2.
Yes,
that's the key thing.
Yeah, right. Come on, get it right. The Demon's Souls.
They belong to the demon.
They're not yours. But yes, but Bill, you know what is yours? This next game on your list.
Oh, okay. Yes, that is mine. So the game I burned the most calories playing this year would be Ring Fit Adventure.
I knew where that was going.
Well, you know, with Rock Band 4, you might be able to... no. Ring Fit really kind of kept me afloat for a lot of the early months of the pandemic, doing that as a form of exercise. I really enjoy my time with that game. It's got a great look, really chipper, fun soundtrack to get you moving, gets you doing a bunch of different exercise types, and it encouraged me to like go and do other kinds of exercise, like running when that became more practical, or like I even went out and got some weights. So I hope to get back to Ring Fit. I have fallen off. The combination of Ring Fit and Rock Band seemed to do something to one of my elbows, where I would start getting like pins and needles in one of my hands.
Oh, geez.
I think that was so. I'm pretty sure that wasn't serious. It was like kind of a tennis elbow type thing, where it's like, oh, if you use your elbow too much, it'll do that. It's gone now. We're fine. But it did discourage me from doing Ring Fit for a while, and I fell out of the habit. So I hope to recapture that habit in the coming year.
Nice, yeah. Very good. Yes, I hope you continue the fit of the rings, which I also have and need to get back into.
I insist that you get back into it.
Ooh, yes, sir.
Number six
is a game that you will be familiar with as well, Bill. It is I talked to you about this at one point, being like, does this count on a game of the year list? But I think we decided on stream that it did. So Risk of Rain 2 is my number six on the Nintendo Switch. A game we have played a bunch together, a game that is so fun and kind of immediately addictive. It wraps you up in these crazy environments with a plethora of monsters and power-ups and things that you can achieve to unlock new characters that provide whole new ways to kind of play through the game. And it's very, very team-based. I think it's been my favorite game to play with a group this year. I really loved it. I would fight to play it any week. We play games together. That's always going to be towards the top of my list. But I really love Risk of Rain 2.
This might not be the last you hear about Risk of Rain 2 on someone's top 10 list, because yeah, that game is real good. So I'm just going to leave it there for the moment and give my final special category award here. Uh-huh. And then, when we go to 5 through 1, those will be ranked. Mm-hmm. And this is my favorite 2020 game that I started in 2019. And this is the game that I appear to have played the most, both in 2019 and 2020 on my Nintendo Switch. And that was Fire Emblem Three Houses.
Aha, uh-huh, yes.
I haven't picked it up in a while, but for the first part of the year, I played a ton of Fire Emblem. I got all the way through the regular campaign. I did a second campaign on hard. I did the DLC, and wow, that's a great game.
Yeah, I mean, agreed. I think that was one of my first major games of 2020 myself. It was the top of my Nintendo charts, as you know, for this year. Yeah, I only played through the main campaign once, but that alone was the most hours I put into any Nintendo game in 2020. You know, it's so rich. It's got so much to it. It's very much based in characters and you developing your love for all these characters, and that combined with some really strategic turn-based combat it's a great time.
Agreed. Yeah, I'm looking forward to, I want to finish up the DLC campaign. I never got all the way through that. This has inspired me to go back and look at some of the older Fire Emblems, which, fair warning to anyone else out there who's going to look, they have a lot less forgiveness baked into them than in Three Houses. Like, they don't have, like save scumming built in as a game mechanic, mm-hmm. like Three Houses does. But I still want to check them out. Like, with the new NES one, they just ported to the Switch for the first time. And then there's a bunch of Super NES ones and Game Boy Advance ones and DS ones that could occupy a whole year by themselves.
Yeah. And I bet they're developing the next one in the franchise as we speak, too. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. I'd like to know what they're doing next. Now we're at the halfway point. So, Brandon, lead on.
We're at the top five. And I know for a lot of people, my number five might be lower than a lot of people would want to hear. But I'm sure this is a lot of people's one or two. But my number five game of 2020 is Hades for the Nintendo Switch. Bill, I don't even know if I told you this. I just beat it for the first time. Thank you. I believe I was on my 16th, 17th run, and I got all the way through.
Nice.
So, I was a little surprised to find out what that meant. I was like, all right. And then, I was like, oh, I have to do a lot more, it seems. But man, what a great combination of intense combat and RPG elements. Leveling up your character mixed with like this very dense lore. There's a lot of characters. There's a lot of very dynamic relationships between all these characters. There's a story and a kind of a mystery at the center that, kind of ties everything together. Zagreus is a great protagonist. You certainly feel for him and his goal and all his interactions with these other characters are just wonderful. A lot of times very funny, a lot of times very dramatic. All the voice actors are very talented. The art style is incredible. I'm gonna be going back into it. I think I might take a bit of a break and then I might go back into it here.
Ooh.
I know.
Yay.
I know. I feel like it's one of those things where I could just continually play it for, months probably. But there are other things that I want to get to. Ooh. In the coming year. So I had to place it at number 5, just because the other things I completed throughout this year just left more of an impact on me in 2020. Whereas with Hades, there still feels like there's a ways for me to go to really get that full sense of the story, full sense of completion from the game.
Well, I'll reserve my comments on Hades for later. And I will just go on to my number 5 because... Mm-hmm. I went back and forth between a few different titles. Like I had a few listed here that were all I thought really good and had different strengths and weaknesses. But the one I'm going to pick is for my number 5, Later Alligator. And that is a game that came out at the end of last year on PC, although it will be coming to the Switch in 2021. So I encourage you to check it out at that point. It's kind of like a more sophisticated or slightly more mature version of the Putt-Putt games, like Putt-Putt Goes to the Moon from the 90s, where they're very, very low stakes adventure games where there are puzzles and there are mini games, but they're not demanding very much.
Mm-hmm.
So what makes Later Alligator so good though is the writing is top notch. It is a very, very funny game, and you're playing as a detective who is trying to investigate why everyone is out to kill this one alligator, and you go all around town trying to talk to people and gather clues and stuff like that. But it's all very, very charming. The music is great too. It's just this real wistful light. Makes you want to go on, an adventure, a little stroll. It's a game where I can't really say too much. Not that the game mechanics are very light, but just the whole experience left me feeling so happy that of the 4 games I mentioned, where I was deciding between which ones I wanted to be number 5, I was like, okay, if I could delete one of these games from my brain and replay it fresh, which one would I want to play the most? And it was Later Alligator.
Oh, nice. That's a good way to do it.
That's me. How about number 4?
Number 4 on my list is the other PlayStation 5 launch title, Spider-Man Miles Morales. A game that took everything I loved about Spider-Man PS4 and just... in a lot of ways improved upon it, made the combat a little more varied, just made the story a little bit tighter. This is another game where, if you went through the main story without all the side quests, you'd probably complete it in under 7 hours, right? But I did all the side stuff too, which definitely lengthened the game a bit. But Insomniac has just done something with the Spider-Man. They've made the ultimate Spider-Man games, right? They're kind of perfect in their execution of this character, and their take on Miles Morales is really well thought out and establishes him as his own hero outside of Peter as well. So it doesn't feel like, in terms of story and it doesn't feel like it was rushed. Despite it being a shorter game, it doesn't feel like corners were cut, in my opinion. It feels like they really put a lot of thought into how they wanted to execute Miles Morales' story. And I think the result is a huge success for them. makes me so excited for future games in this franchise that I assume will feature both our Spider-Men now. And man, it's a fun game. Again, writing's great. It looks great. All the characters are interesting, and there's some, you know, new favorites along with old favorites, and yeah, it's a blast. So I highly recommend picking it up, you know, when people get a PlayStation 5. It is available on PlayStation 4, but go ahead, I say, and wait for it on the PlayStation 5, because it really does look great.
Insomniac, I think, more than any other studio, gets the joy of movement in games, right? Like, I think in Spider-Man, they do a great job of that. I think they did a great job of that in Ratchet and Clank, too. And I would really like to try Miles Morales, and I'm really looking forward to Rift Apart, the next Ratchet and Clank from them as well. Yes. for that.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. I think they just know how to make traversing from, you know, thing to thing almost its own game of sorts, right? You're being active during those moments as well. So it does feel like it keeps you constantly engaged in the game.
Next up for me is a game you might have heard a little bit about earlier. My number four game of the year is Risk of Rain 2. Woo-hoo. Yeah, I really admire what they've done with this idea. You know, I would say that, like, to play this game, really, you do want to play it with other people. I would say, like, the single-player experience would be probably a little lacking, but as a multiplayer game, it's great.
Right.
And Risk of Rain 2 puts forth this idea of, like, what if you reduce the experience of, like, a Destiny or a Borderlands to a one-hour compressed game, beginning to end? You know, you start at level one, you level up, and you find a bunch of disparate items. There's a bunch of different classes to unlock with different tool sets and, like, skills and stuff. And you go fight a bunch of giant-ass monsters. And we've had so much fun, I think, playing through together on stream, playing Risk of Rain 2. Like, it really does a great job of distilling that team-based, raid-based shooter into a small package. Like, you know, I think it would be kind of a hard sell to be like, you know, let's all go play through the Borderlands campaign together, or let's all go through, you know, I don't know, Monster Hunter. I think this game does share some DNA with, like, Monster Hunter. But this one asks so little to get started that it becomes really appealing. And, you know, another budgetary thing, this game is, like, I see it, like, being sold for, like, under $20 new in box for the Switch, if that's where you want to play it. So, yeah. If you have a couple friends with Switch Online, I would highly recommend Risk of Rain 2.
And the physical versions of Risk of Rain 2 come with the original Risk of Rain, just kind of bundled into it.
That's a good point, yeah.
So two games for the price of one.
Two games for the price of one. 2 + 1 = 3. Uh-huh. Brandon, what is your number three?
Oh, what a segue. Very good. My number three game is Ghost of Tsushima for the PlayStation 4. I love samurai epics. And this game perfectly encapsulates everything I like about those movies into kind of an interactive story. I played it through, I did about half of it in Kurosawa mode. So I even played it in, like, the black and white old movie filter, because I'm so into that style of a film that it was so fun to see it kind of translated to a video game. So the sword combat is incredible. Being a samurai feels so cool, and some of the stealth stuff not as great. But stealth is usually a choice that you can choose not to make if you don't want to. There are some missions where you do have to stealth, and they're not. It's not like it's not enjoyable when you have to be stealthy, but I rather face off against a bunch of enemies with my sword in hand and kind of dodge and block, and then sword strike a bunch of guys. So it's also, again, and I keep saying, maybe one of the best photo modes I've ever seen in a video game. There's the amount of like customization you can do for that is really incredible, and every still image in this game looks like a painting. It's just great. It looks really good. Sucker Punch obviously put a lot of thought, a lot of work into this, and I think they succeeded. I think they've created a new IP for them that's going to be that's going to exist, I hope, for years and years to come across the next PlayStation 5 here. I can't recommend it enough. Really a great experience. Tragic but very human story. It's good. Ghost of Tsushima. Check it out.
Excellent. Yeah, that could be a good one to check out next year. Like, pick up a copy and play it on the PS5 to maybe take advantage of some of the better performance on there.
Yeah, I assume they'll do some upgrades. And the other thing that I haven't even gotten into, which they added this year, was the Legends, which is they've created a whole like multiplayer mode that they just added on to the game for free. But I haven't explored that yet, but very much want to, because I think that's so cool they did that, and it's not like additional DLC or anything. It's just like, here you go, here's a multiplayer game for everyone to play in addition to this very rich and very detailed single player experience.
Well, excellent. Yeah, something to keep an eye out for sure. And for my number three here, I'm going to cheat a little bit. I'm going to, depending on your definition, this could be three discrete games or one game and two expansion packs. And that is StarCraft II, where they put out the game originally way, way, way a while ago, back in 2010, and then released two additional story campaigns with additional enhancements to the multiplayer in Heart of the Swarm and Legacy of the Void through the past decade. And this year I played them all back to back to back. It was my first time playing Heart of the Swarm and Legacy of the Void ever, so it was pretty much a whole new experience. And the genre that StarCraft represents, the real-time strategy game with like workers and mining and gas and tech trees and stuff, that's kind of a relic now, really. Even with games like League, those are sort of in a way real-time strategy, but like in a distinctly different way. And then you've got shooters, of course, and card games and stuff, but there isn't really a game that really matches to what StarCraft did that's popular in esports or like is a single player experience, other than like Command and Conquer Remastered, which is obviously a remake of an even older RTS. So it's not clear to me where that genre is headed for the future. Like, it seems like Blizzard is done with StarCraft for the time being, at least. They put out a Diablo game just now, they're working on a new Overwatch game, they still have their hand in the mix with World of Warcraft and Hearthstone, so I'm not quite clear where StarCraft fits into their future. So with that all said, this is an excellent example of the RTS genre. There's a ton of different units to choose from, tons of different maps and scenarios to play through. I had a great time exploring all three, even though I found I was getting a little frustrated because sometimes you get stuck with just these units where you're not really good with them, and it's you kind of have to get good with a certain unit type in order to progress. It's a tutorial for the multiplayer in that way. Not sure I would necessarily recommend this to others. It's a bit of an antiquated experience in terms of games, but yeah, I still enjoyed it a lot.
That's awesome. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised too if Blizzard announced randomly StarCraft 3 coming to next-gen consoles. Wouldn't that be crazy? Or PC, I guess.
That would be pretty wild to me. I just, like, especially because, like, I feel like those games really require a mouse and keyboard to make them work. But it isn't, you know, it's not out of the question. They could adapt it. They could find a way to make it work with a controller. StarCraft 64 is real. And it's playable.
It is a game.
We're getting down to it here, Brandon. What is your number two? What's your second favorite game of 2020?
My second favorite game of 2020. It might be, I don't know, it's been a topic of much controversy for whatever reason. I don't know. People need to chill out. The Last of Us Part Two is my number two game of 2020. A sequel to the Last of Us, the first game I have played through many times. I just think it's a great story. I care about those characters so much, and that continues to be true in The Last of Us Part Two. I think it presents a narrative that is complex and a narrative that is different from a lot of ones that you see in video games. Things are not black and white. There aren't just good guys and bad guys. There are shades of gray. And I think I think it speaks to humanity and forgiveness and, like, hatred and all these things. It explores all of these ideas in a really, really interesting way. On top of that, it's a game that looks incredible. One of the best looking games I've ever seen. Plays really well. The combat is very raw and kinetic. And I think it got a lot of controversy. I think mainly for a lot of its story elements and the choices that it makes and the places that it goes. Which I think if you don't like the story, that's fine. I think it's a little bit unfair how some of the reaction there. I think a lot of people just wanted the same game again a second time. And that is not what Naughty Dog gives us. And I think we're better off for it. I'm glad that they explored something else here. And for me, it really worked. And it was really interesting. I think they really keyed into what type of game they wanted to present and what kind of story they wanted to tell. And it was a success across the board in that respect for me.
Awesome. I'm glad. Yeah, certainly a very decorated game for 2020. You know, I can see, I can appreciate certain things about it that work really well, and like, that they are trying to do something to kind of push the genre and the storytelling forward with the video game medium. Like I would say personally, like, I'm not in love with, like, Naughty Dog games just really in general. Like, I never really got into, like, the Uncharted games too much. Like, I played Uncharted 2 and that's pretty much it.
Oh man.
So
love those games. Love those games. For completely, you know, different reasons, too.
I think, from what I understand thematically, Uncharted 2 and The Last of Us may kind of serve as opposites.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, Uncharted games are like Indiana Jones, you know, our version of Indiana Jones for video games, right? Where it's just like fun and pulpy and like action-packed and funny. You know, it's a lot simpler in a lot of its execution, right? It gets a little more complicated and explores some different things in its sequel entries, like Uncharted 4 especially. But it's very much a different vibe that works very well for me, as in addition to, like, The Last of Us, which is very, yeah, the tones are like complete opposite ends.
So yeah, my number two here, my second favorite game of 2020 is it's a game that's very personally significant to me. I think it is a good game, but I could understand if for other people it was like not their favorite of the year. Though I think it has fared pretty well, like critically and financially, and that would be Final Fantasy VII Remake. I didn't really believe this thing existed until I was like actually playing it, and knowing what I know now, having finished it, I'm still not sure it's going to exist like fully.
Right.
Until I see all the discs in like the, you know, the fancy collector's trilogy, collector's omnibus, or like they'll have Final Fantasy VII Remake 2.8, the, you know,
yeah,
the
right.
Genova collection.
Final and... prologue, whatever. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So like, I don't think it's a huge spoiler to say this is not the entire Final Fantasy VII game. Mm. It's like volume one or act one of the overall story. And I think they did a good job with it. Like, I think they made some choices that are very out there. And, you know, if you're more interested in learning about those, I have done a Final Fantasy VII Remake spoiler cast. You can scroll through the archived episodes to see that. But I think they also did some good work in making the story and the characters more robust than how they acted in the original game. Like, I think they did a really good job of like adding some more depth to Cloud and Tifa and Barret and Aerith that wasn't always there in the original. Like, they have actually done the rare thing where they kind of de-flanderized the characters and like made them have more going on than they did before in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
And the combat, going into this, it's like, well, how are they going to do it? Is it going to be turn-based? Is it going to be real-time? They found a way to kind of mix the two in a fashion that I thought was really good. Like, you can play the game turn-based, or you can play it as an action game. And the action game has, you know, like, some of that good, like, soulsiness to it, where there's, like, a roll and, like, different techniques. But also, you have to get really good at transitioning between the characters in your party, because you'll want to like, you know, do one attack with Barret and then another one with Tifa and finish up with one with Cloud and like hit them all in succession. And it's a pretty challenging combat system, honestly, but it was ultimately rewarding, and they have earned enough faith from me that I am cautiously looking forward to whatever they put out in like 2023.
Yeah, that's awesome. I this is a game that I've put about 2 hours into and just haven't come back to it yet. I really want to get back into it and complete it because those couple hours that I played were very good. So I'm excited to dive into that fully and kind of commit all the time necessary to get through that game.
Well, it's come down to this.
Here we are.
Brandon, what is your favorite game from the year 2020?
20, yes. My favorite game of 2020 is Persona 5 Royal. Now, I feel like this hasn't popped up on a lot of like top 2020 lists, and I'm not sure why. Maybe because it is like, people think that it's like a definitive version of a game that's a few years old, but to me, it's not. It is in addition to being like the most definitive version of the original game, it's also adding so much story and so much gameplay that was not there before. I mean, this is a game that has an entire like new epilogue that is several hours long and is pulling in threads they've placed throughout the original story. They've added a couple characters that you spend a lot of time with. And I loved the original Persona 5 so much. It's my favorite of the Persona series, which is again a game that I, or a franchise that I love. And they've kind of perfected it with Persona 5. And then they added on to that perfection with Persona 5 Royal. And I think we're so lucky to have this game. To me, it's the definitive JRPG, maybe of the decade, right? I think it is, if you like JRPGs and you haven't played Persona 5, what are you doing, right? This is the game. And I love it so much. I finished it. I poured so many hours into it. I still want to go back. You know, I've maxed out all the social links, all that stuff, and I still want to go back and play through it again. I just love these characters so much. I love that story so much. And man, it's a perfect game.
You got me thinking a little bit about why Persona 5 Royal didn't get more hype. I kind of feel like with 4, where it first came out on the PS2, like in 2008 or something, early enough, the same year as Spaceballs, the animated series, but like well after the PS2 was the, you know, conversation, or the, well after the PS2 was the main console, and then like Persona 4 Golden came out on the Vita, and then it took it literally a decade for it to show up anywhere else. Like, those kind of got more of a cult following that grew and grew over the years. Whereas 5 came out and people were like, this game is great, we love it. And it sold well and it did pretty well on Metacritic. And like, I think it got its recognition. And so now it's, you know, Persona 5 Royals time. And it's like, oh, okay, cool. Another one of these. All right. Oh, okay. I'm wondering if Strikers is going to have more of a following behind it, just because it's, you know, it's promising to kind of advance the story beyond the end of Persona 5. It's like a different kind of game, wholly original. So, well, not wholly original, you know what I mean, though. But yeah, it is, I totally see where you're coming from, and I'm looking forward to getting into Persona 5 Royale. I can barely resist the temptation to call it Persona 5 Royale. I'm looking forward to getting into that game, though, next year.
Yes. Yes, I think you will find a lot to love. But enough about me, Bill. It's now time for you to tell us your number one game of 2020.
My number one game is one that we have already mentioned on here. It is one that I got around the time it came out. I started playing it in earnest the week of Thanksgiving and then played it for like 30 hours that week and have played it a lot ever since. And that would be Hades.
Yay!
You know, my 2020 game of the year. Before Hades, like, I enjoyed Final Fantasy VII Remake, I enjoyed Risk of Rain, I enjoyed all those games, but I was like, you know, these games are good. I don't know if there's one that's like really, really captured my imagination or stuck with me until I got to Hades. And this is not going to translate for you, I think, or maybe some listeners, but there has been no other game that has done as good of a job as translating the idea of like a Magic the Gathering booster draft to like an action game that I've ever seen. And like without even any like card game mechanics in it, there's no deck, there's no cards you collect. It's just like you, every time out, you have this randomized toolbox of different skills and abilities you can choose from. And you kind of have to mold it into a good enough build for Zagreus to get to the end of the dungeon, to beat the game, to kick Hades in his posterior. And like, there's so many different iterations on it with like the different weapons and the different boons and the different buffs you can get. And also the Pact of Punishment, where you can like add on different like difficulty modifiers to make people more, give people more health, more deal more damage. When you get a chance and you come back to the game, Brandon, I recommend turning on the Extreme Measures Pact of Punishment option. That's a fun one.
Okay.
And well, on top of it all, the game has a really, really good story that it portions out piece by piece as you play through, and like you learn a little bit more on each run, and you gradually unravel these different characters. Like, I'm 75 hours in, and there are still several plots that I'm looking for additional clues or like trying to figure out how to progress them and get the people to finish their side quest, more or less. And it just gives me a lot of hope that, like, on top of it already being a great game, like, there could be some cool expansion campaign down the line, maybe that includes more characters and more stuff to do, like, which is kind of amazing to say, like, I'm already found so much to do, but like, I feel like there could be still so much more you could discover. And I, you know, before this, like the Supergiant Games, like they've made a lot of like well-regarded titles, like Bastion and Transistor are really well-liked. Pyre is fine. It feels like it kind of flew under the radar comparatively. And Hades, though, like that, this is their game, man. It's like a culmination of all the ideas that they built up in their other titles narratively and gameplay wise, and it's pretty much perfect.
It is very good. I gotta ask, Bill, who's your god of choice? Whose boons are you seeking out? If you got one god, who are you going for?
Gameplay wise, I'm a big fan of Poseidon. I really like his boons.
Interesting.
He's got a knockback mechanic attached to most of his stuff, which is pretty strong. Mm. There's another. Have you seen all the gods? I think you might be missing one god if you just have only beaten the game once.
I think I am missing a god. The last god that I encountered was Demeter.
Oh, okay. So you did. Oh, that's her. Yep, that's the last god. So yeah, she's really good too. Her power is Chill, which slows down enemies near you. That is really, really useful.
My favorite is Dionysus. I'm all about the hangover effects and basically poison, right? I'm all about that.
Yeah.
That stuff. He's my favorite. That's who I go for, boon-wise. Love him.
Of course, if we're talking about boons in terms of like smoochies, Artemis is my fave.
I like Artemis too, actually. She's really good. Smoochy.
You know, she's not like the other gods and goddesses. She hangs out by herself. She's lonely. Right. She's moody.
I think my favorite smoochy is Dusa. I'm a big Dusa fan.
Dusa. She's great too, yeah.
She's so funny. Really like Dusa.
Well, I've said well about 800 times, which tells me that I think we have gotten to the end of our Game of the Years list.
We did it. Wow. What a list. What a great mix of games. I mean, we had a few crossovers, but I think, you know, it's funny. We play so much together. We play so many games together, but you can tell our individual tastes are very varied. We play like a lot of different stuff.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good contrast though. So it's nice to have that. I always like when like people have different stuff to fall back on, or like you can find out all the different like landscapes out there for like games people are playing. And you know, I guess it goes without saying that our true game of the year that kind of just went unsaid, like it's implied, is Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles Remastered.
Yeah, a game that I think we beat. Didn't we beat that like in one run or something?
Yeah, we beat that. Last year, Wolfenstein Youngblood was our game of the year. We knocked it out in one run. So, hey man, next year, It Takes Two is coming out in April. So we got to keep an eye out for that. That should be a fun game to investigate.
Yeah, absolutely. I would totally be down to play that with you. That'd be great.
Perfect. Well, then, until April. No, I'm just kidding. For today, let's call it a wrap. One more time, thank you so much for jumping on, Brandon. Where can people find you if you want them to find you?
Well, thank you, Bill. They can find me on Twitter at BEEShock, and most Thursdays, playing video games with you on your Twitch stream.
Awesome. Well, as for us, we can be reached by email at somanybitspodcast@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook, we're So Many Bits on there. Follow us on Twitter and Tumblr at So Many Bits. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Please rate and review or download from Simplecast or stream via Spotify. We play games, twitch.tv/SoManyBits, Wednesday and Thursday nights, 8 p.m. Central. Wednesday is usually for single-player experiences, and Thursday is more for multiplayer experiences. And last but not least, thank you very much for listening. Have a great summer.
Boom. Boom. Boom.